Our last case this morning is 2021-975, Disciplinary Counsel versus Kevin Christopher Cox. For the respondent, Mr. Mann.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. There are basically, at this point in time, two issues in this case that are disputed. One, did Mr. Cox and VW have a physical sexual relationship? Two, what is the appropriate sanction in this case? And of course, two, in large part, rests on the determination of number one. There is an old legal proverb that's
below, or at the hearing, there was evidence presented, testimony evidence, correct?
Yes.
All right. And it was a credibility issue?
No.
Why not?
Because the panel and the board speak through their entry. They speak through their journal. They made absolutely no reference in their decision to the large volume of evidence that favored Kevin Cox on these issues. They didn't say we looked at it and it's not credible. They just didn't look at it according to their decision. So it's not a credibility, if I may respectfully say so. It's you gotta look at 100% of the evidence, not just the evidence that favors one side.
Are you saying that
you still, it comes down to what they believed, what testimony they believed. If you believe that they didn't sufficiently consider some evidence, that's one thing. But their decision was based on credibility, who they believed.
I would respectfully disagree. Because you can't believe or disbelieve evidence unless you first give it a fair consideration. If you just ignore it.
Well, oftentimes there's evidence presented and it's not considered because it's considered irrelevant or not on point. So it is not, so tribunals do not pay attention to that. But what they did consider, the evidence they did consider, led to the conclusion that your client was dishonest about his relationship with his client. Is that a fair statement?
That was the panel and the board's conclusion, yes.
Okay. And that was based on their hearing, the panel's hearing, that your client was dishonest, that there was a relationship, and that, the other findings they made, correct?
That was their position, correct.
Okay, so that's what we have to work with.
I would disagree. I think you've got a record to work with, and the record contains evidence and information that they just blew right by.
There's
two kinds of evidence, and I'll talk about first, Your Honor, if I may, the evidence that the board did not consider. First of all, it didn't give any consideration to the fact that for 9 out of approximately, I believe, 12 months, I think those numbers are right, Mr. Caligiuri may correct me on that, the office where my client worked did not have the capacity or the ability to meet clients in the office. They would, as a standard and routine matter, meet clients at the client's house or at a restaurant in downtown New Philadelphia, Ohio. In this case, for example, our distinguished colleagues on the other side said, strangely, Mr. Cox had his first meeting with his client at her house. Well, there's nothing strange about it. That's how that firm at that time did business. Next, I hope I'm not accused of bashing anyone here. I don't mean to bash. At about the time that VW told Mr. McCleary, Attorney McCleary, that she had had a physical affair with my client, she was experiencing mental symptoms that are commonly called, and were called in her case, dementia. Now, I'm not trying to bash. I'm not trying to unfairly attack. I'm simply talking about evidence.
Counsel, let me ask it this way. On paragraph 15 of the report over here.
Okay.
It goes through the whole IP address search where kevin.christopher.cox@gmail.com, he denied sending emails, and then after he got the IP addresses, he said, well, I guess it did come from me.
He never got the IP addresses from Google. They wouldn't send them.
It says here the information he referenced were records received from Google that Link responded to the email address. I'm just reading from paragraph 15. So that's wrong. That's a lie.
Well, I would not say that. Perhaps he saw them. He was shown them at the hearing. We tried to get them, but Google just said no.
So he was shown them at the hearing.
I don't remember.
Well, what I'm getting to is you're saying that. There's all this evidence that that's being ignored, and I'm just giving you one that's not being ignored, where he said one thing and then he changed his, at least according to this paragraph, he changed his testimony.
Before this case ever was submitted to a probable cause panel, Mr. Cox admitted that he had engaged in totally improper sexting with his client. He said it was 100% his fault, and that he took full responsibility and he was contrite about it.
I'm asking something different. He denied that kevin.cox.christopher, whatever, Gmail account was his. Then he admitted later it was.
I don't think he admitted. I think what he said was, I'm not contesting it if you say it was. I don't remember what
they quote from the hearing transcript. Yeah, it's possible. I sent messages from that address. Close quote.
Okay, it's possible.
Well, but first he said he didn't even know about the email address.
No, I believe what he said at his deposition on November 17th of 2019 was, I wasn't using that email address at any time relevant to this case. I've gotten a new address, and I've been using my new address. Later, he amended his testimony to say, look, I'm not going to dispute it. I don't remember using it. It's possible I use it.
And they were communications with VW, right? That was the issue. So was he using an email address he hadn't used in a while to hide his communications with VW?
No.
Were they all on the firm email address?
No. But there's no question, no one's disputing anything about sexting. That's not in dispute in this case. But he certainly did not have a physical sexual relationship with anybody using a cell phone. That's the point I'm trying to make. No doubt, we admitted before the case was even filed, he did engage in improper sexting, which is frankly much more common than I understood it to be. I looked at a study published in the Los Angeles Times that said it's extremely common. 96% of people have admitted to sending sexting messages in the last year. So he did that. And we're not disputing that, and we've never disputed it since before this case was filed. We're disputing the alleged physical sexual relationship for which there is essentially, other than VW's testimony, no evidence.
Counsel, how do you explain paragraph 16 of the report that places him at where she lives, I forget, Urichville, okay, because he called his wife from there?
Well, there's a court in Urichville. I don't.
At 10 p.m.?
Well, as I say, there's a court in Urichville, and there are other clients and people he knows in Urichville, and I can't account for every minute where I've been just in the last couple of days.
So that was just maybe coincidental that here he is at 10 p.m. at Urichville, where her home is located. An hour and a half later, he receives a call from her. Then there's emails that state from she, I guess, to him, "I miss you already." He responded the next morning, "I feel the same way. I hope you have a great day. I'm dragging, LOL." And then 9:17 that morning, she sent him a message, "You were absolutely worth every second. Wow. I can rewatch the garage episode on my security camera. I was definitely surprised, excited to see you."
Okay.
That never happened? Is that your client's testimony? That never happened.
No, my client's testimony is none of that establishes a physical sexual relationship. There was not one. This so-called sex tape that shows physical sexual activity in the garage was referenced, but no one's ever seen it except for VW, and she showed it to one of her friends. Or one of her friends saw about 30 seconds of it, but we never saw that sex tape at the hearing, and we never saw the friend testify at the hearing. So where's the evidence? Now, if we want to simply presume that everything deals with physical sexual relationships, then we can do that. My point is that the history of freedom in the United States is largely based on legal procedure. And legal procedure demands that burdens of proof be met and that we don't convict people based on flimsy evidence. And I'm sorry, but in my opinion, that's what's happened in this case. With respect, again, I said there's two issues in dispute. This is the issue of a physical sexual relationship. There's, I started to talk about what evidence was in the record that was not commented on at all by the panel, but let's talk about other evidence. There's no witness who's...
Counselor, just because it wasn't commented on, does that mean it wasn't considered?
I'm sorry?
Just because it wasn't commented on, does that mean it wasn't considered?
I'm sorry. I have a very bright light in front of me, and I'm sort of looking down here. Yes, that's what it means, because courts and panels speak through their entries. That's black letter law since forever. Why didn't they consider this evidence and say, well, these witnesses who testified and said that there were two women who testified, they worked in the McCleary office, one Sarah Crennel. She testified that she was, at that time, she's an attorney now, she was a paralegal then. She testified she was the go-to person for VW. She said, I don't trust her and I don't believe her, but I do believe Kevin Cox. Another paralegal, Ms. Russell, who now lives in West Virginia, testified, I don't trust VW. She says crazy things. She's emotionally unstable. One minute she's laughing, then the next minute she's crying, then the next minute she's joking around.
Well, Counselor, if your client denies having a sexual relationship.
No.
No, your client doesn't deny it?
No.
Oh,
He's never denied that. He's denying having a physical sexual relationship.
I see. Got it.
And he admitted having a sexual relationship that involved sexting before probable cause was even filed or sought in this case. In terms of what other evidence does not exist, there's no witness who saw anything.
Is it fair to categorize their relationship, because she was a client, as inappropriate?
Yes.
As an affair?
I don't think it's an affair. Ms. VW testified in our hearing that there was no affair. She testified in the common pleas court there was no affair. But she says Kevin Cox had an affair with her, but she did not have an affair with him. So I can only report what the facts are and leave it to Your Honor to sort those facts out. But she says, VW says, there was no affair. Now, her own lawyer testified that, well, if this case had gone forward much more, I would have had to notify the trial court judge that there's a problem with her testimony. And she expressed concerns about being charged with perjury for the way she testified.
Okay, wait a minute. This is something her lawyer is on the record saying.
Yes. Mr. McCleary, yes.
Okay.
And Mr. McCleary, by the way, is the person who filed this legal ethics grievance. VW didn't file it. VW has testified in the record in this case. Again, this wasn't commented on by the panel. I don't want anything bad to happen to Mr. Cox as a result of this case. Those are facts. I'm not trying to bash anybody. There's no witnesses who hurt anybody. There's no photos, no movies, no videotapes establishing a sexual relationship. We heard about the sex tapes again. We didn't see it. And the witness who supposedly saw it didn't testify. There's no audio recording that tends to establish or establishes a physical relationship. There's no forensic evidence. Ms. Cox says they met at a hotel in Canton, Ohio, and had sex there. VW says that. Mr. Cox says, I've never been to that hotel, and I've got GPS tracking data that shows on the day in question I wasn't there. These are things that merit reasonable consideration. They do not merit being ignored. I'd like to talk a little bit more, if I may.
Counsel, you've used your time.
Thank you.
Have you? Wait a second. Yes, you have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Caligiuri.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of the court. I'm Joe Caligiuri. I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. I'd like to address one important matter that my opposing counsel brought up with regard to his client admitting that he had engaged in an inappropriate sexting with his client before anything was filed in this case. But what's critical for this court to realize about that statement was that he had already misrepresented in his response to our letter of inquiry that he did not send, create text or email messages. Then, in a pre-complaint deposition, lied under oath and again said he didn't create or send the text messages in question, effectively stating that his client was making them up. It wasn't until after the complaint was filed and he filed his errata sheet that he then came around and admitted that the text messages were from him, but he still denied that the email messages came from his account. And when he was confronted with the records that showed that the email, by the way, those records were provided before the hearing in this matter, that is when, as Justice Fischer pointed out, that he admitted that it may be my email address, but I still don't remember sending the emails, which is just inconceivable that a lawyer who was representing the firm's highest paying client everyone that testified in this case stated that she was the firm's most important client, that within 2 to 3 weeks of representing her, he's sending her these salacious text messages and email messages, yet has no recollection of ever doing them? It's inconceivable. What he wants you to believe is that he only engaged in the sexting. If that's the case, why didn't he just admit that up front? He's only willing to admit, and this is exactly what the board found, what Relator was able to prove with documentary evidence. And that's why you have these piecemeal admissions throughout the case. The fact of the matter is, you had a 47-year-old single mother who did not file this grievance come into what the board classified as, at the very least, a very embarrassing situation, admit to having sex with her lawyer 50 to 100 times, and then proving through the documentary evidence, really, as Chief Justice O'Connor mentioned, that was that sequence of events from November 3rd, 2017, was a real-time corroboration of a physical sexual encounter.
Mr. Caligiuri, do you understand lawyer for respondent or respondent saying that if you don't have any evidence other than VW stating this happened, you don't have any video, you don't have any third-person cooperation, then there is insufficient evidence to accuse him of a physical sexual relationship?
Well, I understand the argument. I disagree with it.
No, I'm saying is that what you understand his argument to simply be?
Yeah.
On the physical
yes,
aspect?
Yes, I'm sorry. The problem with opposing counsel's argument is that there is other evidence that absolutely corroborates a physical sexual relationship, and that is or are the emails and text messages, again, that at least on November 3rd and subsequent on November 17th, I believe, the Strasbourg incident, where they're actually talking about engaging in sex. And so there is evidence. He wants to point to everything that wasn't mentioned in the board's report or that Relator didn't present during the case, but we had the testimony of his client, whom the panel found was far more credible. That's a quote from the board's report, far more credible than respondent. The board found that VW displayed a level of forthrightness and candor in a situation that was very embarrassing to her, that she expressed no feelings of anger or ill will towards her lawyer, and in the end, she wasn't the one that brought the grievance, and she was concerned about the repercussions to her lawyer. Led to her credibility.
Is it true that she categorized the relationship not as being an affair?
Yes. In her divorce case, she was asked whether or not she had an affair with Kevin Cox. And she said, no, I did not have an affair with Kevin Cox. Subsequent to that testimony, and that was the only question that was asked. Subsequent to that testimony, she told a paralegal in the office that she had had sex with Kevin Cox. That paralegal then went and told Greg McCleary, the owner of the firm. And this was a couple months now after that testimony. And Mr. McCleary explained to her that, you know, if you had sex with Mr. Cox, that could be considered an affair, and we may have a problem with our testimony. And he testified at the disciplinary hearing and said that it was VW that was very concerned and not want to mislead the court, even if it negatively affected her divorce proceedings. So it was her that was driving it. And if you look at Exhibit 18, that's a Facebook message or an email message between her and Mr. McCleary after they had this discussion, and she tells him, before I admit to perjury, I want to tell you what I was thinking. And she talks about the fact that because Kevin Cox had told her, she was free to date anyone she wanted because her husband had moved out of the house, their marriage was over, and he had told her that, falsely, that his wife lived out of state and they were in a divorce, going through a divorce. She didn't think it was a quote-unquote affair. So when push came to shove, they elected not to alter that testimony or correct that testimony, but that was her explanation, and it's mentioned in the board's report. They said, we found her explanation to be consistent. It's inconsistent with her testimony because now she's saying, if that's what an affair means, I did have an affair. But if they would have asked me whether or not I had sex with Kevin Cox, I would have said yes. So with regard to the credibility. It's absolutely is a credibility case. And the board found that VW is far more credible than the respondent, but they also had that corroborating evidence involving the text messages and the email messages. But Mr. Mann talks about the sanction in this case, and the reason why we're advocating for this court to adopt the board's recommendation and impose a 2-year suspension with 1-year state is not simply because of the sexual relationship, physical sexual relationship that Mr. Cox engaged in with VW, but his pervasive pattern of dishonesty. This is someone that has misrepresented every step of the way throughout the disciplinary process and continues it today. It started when Mr. McCleary confronted him with the email and text messages. He categorically denied sending them, creating them, or having any knowledge of them. And what makes this case so offensive is that he put his credibility up against his clients immediately. And instead of just admitting what he had done to the inappropriate nature of a sexual relationship, he bashed his client every step of the way. Then in response to Relator's investigation, he misrepresented in the LOI, categorically denied the emails, categorically denied any rule violations whatsoever.
Is this sanction, the recommended sanction here, heightened than those of some cases we've had dealing with inappropriate sexual relationships with clients because of the dishonesty that's found throughout this matter?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's because of the dishonesty that we're asking for an actual suspension from the practice of law. And one of the points I was going to make is that this case is very similar to Disciplinary Counsel versus Benbow from 2018. Same situation. Lawyer engaged in a sexual relationship with his client, denied it under oath, and even filed a false errata sheet, which is exactly what Mr. Cox did in this case. The difference between Benbow and Mr. Cox is that Benbow eventually admitted to his misconduct at the disciplinary hearing, despite the fact that he was still a bit evasive and argumentative, but he stipulated to all the violations. Mr. Cox has never done that. He's still stating that he did not have sex with VW, despite the overwhelming evidence that he did, and despite the fact that he has lied throughout every step of this proceeding. So that's why we asked this court to adopt the board's recommendation and impose the 2-year suspension with 1-year state. Unless there are any further questions, thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to take my final 30 seconds by reading from a March 21, 2019 op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, authored by a professor emeritus from Harvard Law School. It reads, "If you are accused of a crime, you are entitled to the presumption of innocence. But in the age of Me Too, people accused of sexual misconduct are subjected, at least in the court of public opinion, to a presumption of guilt. Worse, a claim of innocence, even a provable one, is itself treated as an offense, an assault on the accused and on survivors in general. May I very respectfully suggest that that type of thinking, that type of Me Too movement type thinking, has permeated the atmosphere of the court systems and other non-political systems, and we would respectfully request that that not be permitted to continue. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, or would you adjourn, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.